It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Mike Finnerty. I'm getting better at it, Ger, haven't I?
Yeah, it's grown on me, definitely, yeah. But at the same time, I don't think it beats the OG in Rob Murphy.
Yeah, it may or may not be left in, of course. If it is, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and you are welcome to the Mayo News Football Podcast County Final Review Show. Yes, after all the talk, all the hype, all the speculation, most of it generated by this podcast, the senior and intermediate finals are over. And at this stage, on Monday night, I can only imagine what the celebrations are like around Ballintubber and the Neil. It's only a year ago, Ger, since you were having your own Monday night celebrations in Ball. Give us an idea of what you think might be going on right now in the likes of Corley's, or the Old Ground, or Mellets in the Neil, or maybe around the hotspots in Cong. A Monday night now. We're into day two of the celebrations. Guys are getting tired, cranky, and a little burnt out, I'm sure.
Well, day three, Mike.
True, good point. Even though the county final was Saturday night, there was still a few hours left to get stuck into it. So yeah, day three.
Plenty of hours, yeah. Well, going by what a little birdie told me that he saw on Instagram, some of the Ballintubber lads are gone south, travelled past the border, are celebrating in Gawler right now. The Neil lads, I haven't seen it, but I'd imagine they're having some good crack in the Neil. Or
just as a matter of interest, because Ed and I, Ed joins us as well. We'll hear from him shortly. Ed and I are over the hill now. We've lost touch with the youth, the young generation. What do your modern day club footballers, early to mid 20s, do when they win a county final? Back in our day, there was a bit of a sing song, probably a few yarns told about the good old days, and then we all went home couldn't quite possibly head for day two. But what do guys your age get up to now?
You might be surprised to hear, lads, that it hasn't really changed that much. We're still drinking and doing an odd sing song, although the songs probably have changed. Yeah. But the stories still go on, and yeah, the story is the exact same. Lads have a few drinks, and you know, the stories get a bit wilder as the drinks get heavier.
Well, if you are from the Ballintubber or Neil parishes and areas, we hope you've enjoyed and are enjoying the celebrations. I know three Neil supporters landed back in New York a couple of hours ago. What you call a whirlwind visit. Oliver Brown, Porrick May and Tony McTighe, who flew home for the Neil game, got to see the match, got the pre-match drinks in. Might have had a couple of my waddies on the Sunday around Cross, and now they're back in New York on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean again. So that's what you call loyalty and dedication. I know a lot of Ballintubber fans came from near and far as well to watch their team make history. And isn't it a real pity that every dressing room, every county final winning dressing room, it doesn't have a Miles Kelly? Because you know, Milo can whip out the guitar and get the sing song going at the drop of a hat. Other clubs not so lucky.
Yeah, like maybe he's available for hire, because he does quite a good gig wherever, whether it's in a dressing room or in a bar. So maybe when he retires, that could be his that could be where he'd move into. Some guys move into management when they retire, but Milo could find a gap in the market there and go into county final winning sing songs, you know, and write his own song for each county finalist ahead of it, like the boys from the Tubber in 2011, you know. But yeah, going back to what you were talking about with Jared there, I think the one big difference between now and then, Mike, is social media and camera phones. So it's probably just as well, when we were witnessing, or maybe not part of, but witnessing celebrations back in the day, that there weren't camera phones capturing everything. So that's definitely a plague of it. But on the other side of it too, you get to hear stories about the priest in the Neil singing the boys from the County Mayo at Mass on the Sunday morning, and the likes of the Tony McTighes of this world. And I seen Alan and Michael Plunkett's sister watching the game with a newborn child the last day as well. And again, it's nice to see all those stories retold on social media, and you can just, I suppose, get a flavour for what it means to people in all over the world.
Yeah, before we get down to the nitty gritty and talk about the match itself, Ed mentioned him there, Father Declan Carroll. I must give him a shout out. He sang the boys in the County Mayo at both masses in Cong yesterday, and managed to change the words, I think, of the last verse to work in Con Cross the Neil. And I gather he's already booked the Sweeney Cup for the next few weekends. He wants it at the masses in all the different churches in the parish. And as one former Neil footballer quipped earlier on today, having been in Park until recently, Father Carroll felt he wanted to make the step up from an intermediate parish to a senior one. And I can only imagine the noses that are going to be knocked out of joint in Park when they hear that. Yeah, down with that sort of thing.
Yeah, you better not identify who said that, Mike, because I'd say his safety could be at risk if the Park boys got a hold of him. But I would have met in the course of my work in the last 15 years. I would have met Declan Carroll. He was parish priest in Burrishule as well, and great guy. And I'm not surprised to see that he came up with something creative to mark the occasion. And I can only imagine the people going to, which maybe a few cobwebs on them, going to mass on Sunday morning, and probably not regretting it once he got going. And maybe those who decided against getting out of the bed wondered, damn it, I should have went.
We're going to tackle the nuts and bolts of the senior and intermediate final very shortly. We're also going to hear over the course of the podcast from both winning camps. A little bit later on, when we turn to the intermediate final, we're going to hear from Shawnee Cosgrove, who kicked the winning point for the Neil. And we're also going to hear from the Neil manager, Owen Hughes, who spoke to Jure once the dust settled. And then coming up a little bit sooner than that, we'll have a couple of interviews as well from the Ballantubber camp. And I'll tee those up as we get to them. Ed, we talk about predictions every week on the podcast, and a lot of the time we have to sit here and flagellate ourselves and take our beating when we get it wrong. But am I right in saying unanimous decisions all round last weekend, or last Monday? We went for Ballantubber to win the senior, the Neil to win the intermediate. And in terms of Ballantubber, first and foremost, though, for a long time on Saturday night, they got their fill of it, and credit where it's due, when their mettle was tested and the chips were down in those last 10 minutes, they came good. And, you know, it's very hard now to pick holes, isn't it, in their status as the team to beat in Mayo Club football. Like, they have the 5 county titles in 10 seasons. They've done the back-to-back. Their reputation now looks pretty bomb-proof from where I'm sitting anyway.
Oh, no, it absolutely is. And I just think back to the final margin, obviously, was 3 points, but there was a stage of, it might have been up, it felt like it was around 5 minutes, where there was a point in between the teams, and Balladreen were doing everything they could to try and get that equaliser, and they could not get within a relatively high percentage area to get a shot off. Ballantubber just shut them down. And like, it's something we said last week in the podcast, a 1 point gap against Ballantubber can feel like an awful lot more, because they're so assured in defending that situation. They don't panic, they don't commit stupid fouls, they talk to each other, they pass guys on, they're so alert to every danger imaginable. And it just, like, the closing stages in that game, it reminded me of last year's county final as well, where there was just a point in it late on, and it was just such a controlled effort by a seasoned group of the core season group of footballers. But as well as that, you know, they have a lot of young guys in there, and they didn't look in any way as if they weren't experienced either, in the way they carried themselves and the way they performed the last night. And again, it just goes back to what we would have said last week, that if Ballyhardine were going to win it, they probably needed to win it well. And they had a platform just before half time, like we were saying, if they got a couple of goals in the first half and they were 4 points up coming down the straight. And that goal from Michael Plunkett, once that went in, it was very hard to see anything but a Ballantubber win. And whilst Ballardreen did absolutely everything they could in the second half, it was just, the Tubber were immovable. Like, you know, they were just exactly where they wanted to be, you know, and they're just past masters at seeing out games that are tight like that. And we've seen that. And again, it shows how, when we saw how difficult Ballardreen found it, how difficult Brafey found it the previous year, it shows how good Castlebar and Mitchells were in getting on top in that rivalry for the few years in the middle part of the decade. But Ballantubber's response to win the last two county titles, you know, when few gave them the chance of doing so, it just, and to go to five titles for the decade. It's just, it's an incredible achievement for a rural club that have had won no county titles before for this decade, like, you know. And what they might not always be pleasing on the eye in terms of how they shut teams down, like, but they're so effective at what they do, and they're so brilliant at what they do, and they have so much talent as well. They can beat you any which way they want, but they're just so, so strong at seeing out games like that where a team is hitting them with absolutely everything and they can just weather those storms.
And of course, a manager who deserves huge credit for building and oiling this Ballintubber machine, Kevin Johnson. You spoke to him after the match, and I was just reading through that interview a little bit earlier on, and one part of it that caught my eye was just how important Kevin felt Ballintubber scoring that 1-1 before half-time was. And that's a point that Ed has just made there, that 1 minute Ballyhadrine are 4 points up and you're coming into half-time, and all of a sudden the county final is taking shape and you're saying, Ballyhadrine now, this is perfect. And within 60, 90 seconds, that lead was wiped out. Did you feel that at the time as well? Did you feel the momentum shift when Plunkett got the goal and then Stephen O'Malley gets the point and they go in at half-time level?
Yeah, massively. And, you know, as Kevin Johnson said as well in the interview, he said it completely changed the team talk at halftime, and it did. Because up until that point, I think it was the 31st minute when Michael Plunkett was through and got the goal. But up until that point, Ballyhadrine had played pretty well. They were 4 points up. They kicked seven wides down, which is something that was disappointing. But, they did look the sharper team. They built up the four-point lead. It was exactly the position they needed to be in going into half-time, because you knew then Ballintubber would have to open up. They'd have to chase the game. And it's not a situation that Ballintubber have found themselves in this year or enough, and oftentimes in the last couple of seasons. But then out of nowhere, Michael Plunkett picked up the ball from a free just about inside his own half, walls through, took a couple of players on, had a lovely hand pass to Jason Gibbons, and Jason Gibbons had a lovely hand pass over the top. You know, you probably would criticise some of the Ballyhadrine defenders who were kind of standing there looking at it, but, you know, the composure and everything that he showed to go around Patrick Sharkey in the goal and to finish to an empty net was top class, particularly from a centre back. And then straight away after that, Stephen O'Malley popped the point over. So all of a sudden it's a level game there out of nowhere in injury time, when 2 minutes before that Ballyhadrine were in dreamland. This is the position they wanted to be. They stretched Ballintubber and they were going to bring Ballintubber out of their shell, but then Ballintubber just did what Ballintubber do. And as Ed said, they just suffocated the game in the second half, you know, went tit for tat for 20 minutes, and then in the final 10 just really kicked on. And Kevin Johnson pinpointed those 10 minutes where he thought his team were outstanding. They outscored Ballyhadrine 4-1. They won the 50-50 balls. A couple of the big players, Jason Gibbons, I thought, made a couple of really big plays at that stage. Jeremy O'Connor made a really big play at the end where he hit that long ball, kind of hitting hope ball into his brother Killian, and Killian pointed from it. But when a lot of players, I think, in that situation would have recycled the ball to try and hold on to it, but Jeremy just put the head down and put the boot through it and trusted his brother, and that's what he did. But, you know, it just goes back to the experience in a Ballintubber, where Ballyhadrine probably didn't have that experience in the second half when they really, really needed it.
Ed, we sat here a week ago and we talked a good bit about matchups, and we talked about tactically how Ballyhadrine might go about their business. And, you know, when you reflect back on Saturday night, if Paul McHugh and John O'Mahony and the selectors, if they had their time again, do you think they'd come at things a little differently? Do you think they could have done anything before the game as the game was unfolding? Because it just seemed the longer the second half went on, the more it was Kevin Johnson and Ballintubber who were calling the shots and dictating things. I'm just even thinking of Keelan McDonald coming in and making such a big impact. Alan Dillon came on as well and gave it a bit of impetus. Ballyhadrine, will they have regrets, do you think, in terms of how they went about it, or were they just beaten fair and square?
Yeah, look, you're always going to have regrets, and you're always going to think about, you know, did I see that in advance or did I see this in advance? But I think the game was going along the way they wanted it to go. They hit the ground running. They were positive in their approach, which they had to be. Like, you know, they might have been a little bit tentative at times in the middle of the first half when Ballintubber got a little bit of a grip on things. But by and large, they went for it. You know, Ryan Lynch had 4 points from play against Mitchells in the first half. I think three wides he had from decent positions the last day, you know, things like that. They had a couple of goal chances early on. Not out-and-out goal chances, perhaps, but goal chances that, you know, if they go in against you and you're underdogs, you're kind of hoping that you might get those goal chances and that they might go in. In the second half, it's very like the likes of Keelan McDonald coming in. If he's coming into a game where Ballaghreen are 4 or 5 points up and they're sitting back, you know, it's going to be harder for subs like that to have the impact. But because Ballaghreen were chasing, there was gaps for subs like that to come in. And, you know, Keelan McDonald came in and kicked two outrageous scores, like, you know. But again, he was coming into a situation in the game that suited, you know, a good attacking substitute like him, you know. So I just think that so much changed. And you'd almost feel helpless for Ballaghreen in the second half that, you know, they had to try and get out in front and they had to try and wrest control of the game, but they never looked like they could do that. And that's the trouble with Ballantubber. They just lock you into a vice-like grip that if you go behind, even by just a point to them, and they are dictating the terms of engagement in that game, it's going to be so, so difficult. So I'm sure in Ballaghreen and guys that know the players inside out and know the various different strengths or what different guys can do away from maybe the positions they were in or what left field options could have been there. I don't know them well enough to be able to say that A, B or C would have changed things. But from what I do know of them and what I do know of Ballantubber, I think Ballaghreen started the game the way they needed to. They got the platform. And just that goal before halftime just changed absolutely everything. And I think from there on in, they were going to need to get a lucky break to get back into that game. And Ballantubber don't tend to give you a lucky break when they're in that position.
Well, one of the 11 Ballantubber players who now have 5 Mayo Senior Club Championship medals is their captain, Damien Coleman from Clogher. And after the match, very shortly after the game, in fact, I was lucky enough that I spotted Damien just standing around and waiting for his teammates to come and join him before the Mauclair Cup was presented. So I thought I'd seize the moment and I would grab him for a few words from the Mayo News Football Podcast. So I'm here with Damien Coleman. We're waiting for the rest of your teammates to come up and join you, Damien, when you can lift the Mauclair Cup. You've waited, 12 months only since you last lifted it, so you won't mind waiting a little longer.
No, absolutely not, Mike, absolutely not. We don't do it easy anyway, but look, it's just unbelievable to get over the line again. It's unbelievable, like, small rural club, 5 championships in 10 years, it's something special, like, special.
This final, just in your own words, what was it like to play and how does it compare with finals that have come before?
Oh, it was as tough as any of them. Like, they put up some battle out there. I know, like, we came in expecting that, but, you know, they really, really put it up to us and they were very, very unlucky, and they're a credit to themselves and they show that they can compete with any of us now at this stage. So it's up to everyone else now to catch up to them and all. So it was just a serious battle out there. Serious, serious battle.
What won it, do you think, in the end for Ballantubber? What made the difference? What tipped the scales?
Oh, I suppose we know how to grind these things out. You know, there was a few hairy moments down there in the goal line, but J.O. put his head in the line once, Welchie put his head in the line, and, you know, I suppose we've been there, we've done it, and that stands you in these occasions. It stands you, like, we've so many leaders out there, it's just phenomenal. Dillo came on, got on about 4 or 5 balls, like, made the difference, and, you know, I just think experience down the home stretch, we've seen it through, and, you know, not as comfortable as we would have liked, but we're there, and we've got over the line.
I know when I spoke to you last year, we spoke about what it's like to follow in the footsteps of John Feeney, Tom Early and Jason Gibbons, but now you're out on your own, the first man to lift the Mauclair Cup twice as Ballantubber captain. I mean, you must be 10 foot tall.
Ah, yeah, look at it, it's something I take very seriously and it's something I'm very, very proud of, and, you know, any of them boys could do this job, and it's just an honour for me to get to do it, and to lift this cup twice is just something I won't ever forget anyway.
What are they like as lads, actually? We get to see them on the field, you get to see them on a Tuesday and a Friday and on the nights out and behind the scenes, but as a group of men, as a group of friends and teammates, what are they like?
Ah, they're brilliant. Like, we have great crack off the pitch, we've serious banter, we all get on really, really well, and that's what makes it so special. Like, you know, it started in 2010 with the older boys, we were the younger lads, and now the younger lads have come along and they've come in and bought into the whole thing. It's just special. It's a special group.
You're needed here to lift the cup. Tell me this, have you the speech written, or are you going to do it off the top of your head?
We might do it off the cuff this year, I'm not really sure.
Ed, I suppose the obvious question now, and it will be for Ballantubber as well once they get this blowout out of their system and they get back to the training pitch this week, is can they have a crack of a Connacht club title? Because until they get the Moclair Cup in the bag, obviously it's the last thing on their mind. But now that they're out of Mayo again, you do sense that this is going to become a thing now. It's going to become the elephant in the room. You know, they've been out of Mayo four times since 2010. They haven't been able to win a Connacht club title. Obviously, in that time, Mitchells have come out and done it. It has to be a huge driving force within this group now, doesn't it? And given that it will be, what's your gut feeling? Did you see enough Sunday night to make you think that they have developed enough, they have matured enough, that they could go on maybe and win it this year?
On the basis of the last night, maybe not, because I think they... But again, I factor into that they played the game the last evening the way they saw it. And I still maintain that, and I was saying this on Twitter over the weekend, that they have the footballers to play a more open, expansive type of football. Like, you look at the forward quality that they have. The way they use that forward quality is that when they need to score, they get the scores. It doesn't need to be a lot of scores over the course of the game, but like, if they need to win a game by 10 points to 8 and they're a point down, they can step it up and they can go through the gears. And Killian O'Connor, Alan Dillon, Alan Plunkett, Kieran Gavin, Noel Gertie, Stephen O'Malley, Brian Walsh, etc. You know, and so many more that can come in from the bench. Keelan McDonald, like, can step up to the mark and get the scores that they need. They're not going to beat Cor Finn if that's who they end up playing. I think they're...
Would they beat Tuam Stars?
Well, that was nearly the question, wasn't it? You know, so,
and it could be, yet, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're capable of beating every other team in Connacht, including Tuam Stars. The big question is Cor Finn, and they will need to play a different way of football against Cor Finn. And they had a good cut at them off them for three quarters of the game last year, but just probably it was just a little bit more open than they were used to, and they got maybe a little bit stretched at the back. So that's going to be the big test for them. But of course, you know, a lot would have to happen both for Cor Finn and Ballantubber before they would necessarily be meeting each other. But they absolutely can win. They'll absolutely be looking at it that way. You know, there's no doubt about it that it would irk them that Castlebar Mitchells would be seen as, outside the county certainly, and from quarters within the county, as the more successful team because they've managed to navigate their way through Connacht and to All-Ireland finals, and that Ballantubber haven't been able to do that. And it would just round off the decade perfectly for them if they were to win a Connacht title. And yeah, if they weren't able to do so, you know, their excellence within the county will not be in dispute, but it will annoy them, like, because they're a high achieving group. A lot of those guys came through from, you know, successful under 21 teams in 08 and 09, I think. And they've always, you know, set their stall out to go as far as they can, like, and it will feel like unfinished business if they don't get over the line in Connacht. But they just happen to be, you know, around the same time as an incredible Cor Finn team who somehow seem to be getting better, certainly on the basis of the last 2 years, maybe not so at the weekend against Tuam, or maybe we're, you know, not being fair to Tuam in that regard. But yeah, it will take something different from them to be able to take down a team like Cor Finn.
Well, up next for Ballantubber are the Leitrim champions, Glencairn Manor Hamilton. That game in the Connacht Club quarter-final is on Sunday the 3rd of November, back at McHale Park in Castlebar. And by a quirk of my work schedule, I actually saw Glencairn Manor Hamilton win the Leitrim County title a few weeks ago. And something tells me, if you haven't heard of their captain and corner forward, Conor Dolan, before now, then you will in the next few weeks. He is, without a doubt, the Glencairn Manor sharpshooter. But they're up next for Ballantubber. And before we look ahead and move on to reflect back on the intermediate final, we're going to hear from the Ballantubber camp again, because another man who I spotted just daydreaming at the wrong time before the cup was presented on Saturday night was the only man, to my knowledge, who works with Sky Sports in London that now has 5 Mayo Senior Club Championship medals. That is, of course, the lesser known of the O'Connor brothers, Rory.
Hi, I'm here with Rory O'Connor. Ballintubber are about to be presented with the Mauclair Cup. Rory, what a story. Five county titles since the breakthrough in 2010, and you've been there for each and every one of them. You must be over the moon.
Yeah, absolutely delighted. We've had numerous players coming through, and from 2010, the likes of John Feeney setting it off, winning against Castlebar in 2010 was brilliant. And then I suppose that win gave the youngsters a boost. Going back 10 years, a lot of those players would have been under 14 or 15 and would have seen what success was like, and success breeds success, I suppose. And a lot of those young lads are out there today, like Kieran Gavin, Keelan MacDonald, Brian Walls, a few of those lads. So it's brilliant that we've got the title back to the Tubber again tonight. So yeah, five titles, it's unreal achievement for a club like ours. So hopefully we can push on this year and take it one game at a time and go further than we have ever done before.
And to win it, to have the final whistle sound with the four brothers on the field, I mean, from a personal point of view.
Yeah, it was brilliant, I suppose. Power coming on there at the end was great, but it just in general, all the brothers that are playing on the teams, like the Gerties, and you've got the Plunkets there as well, and so it shows like the club of Ballintubber, it's built on families and tradition and stuff. So yeah, it was great to have the four lads playing, and each of them play their part. And
did you get to meet the chairman yet, as a matter of interest?
No,
also your dad.
I've met most of the relations out there, and I know my mother is working today, but she said she'd try and make it for the last few minutes, so hopefully she's out there as well celebrating. But no, I haven't seen dad yet. So
and they talk about people making sacrifices to play with their club. For the last 2 years, you've been travelling back and over from London. You obviously, you've got a busy work schedule with Sky Sports. You work weekends, you work all around the United Kingdom. How difficult or easy has it been for you to commit this year and to say, yeah, count me in, I'll go again?
Yeah, well, I was never going to transfer over to a club in London that easily when I knew the calibre of players that we had here in Ballintubber. So I wanted to push on. I know I wasn't able to make a lot of the training sessions due to the work commitments of working during the weekends, but it's been able to work out the last couple of weekends once the season has finished up in the All-Ireland Championship. I've got a lot of weekends free, and Ballintubber have been gracious enough to pay for, you know, flights coming back and stuff. So it's just been a lot easier when you've got the likes of these players playing like this and getting the cup back to Tubber.
So that was the very silky tones of Rory O'Connor. Works primarily behind the camera with Sky Sports, but with a voice like that, only a matter of time, you'd imagine, until he gets promoted. Martin Tyler, watch your back, I suppose, or possibly one of the GA commentators on Sky, watch your back.
Yeah, maybe Mike Finnerty or maybe Marty Marcy. I suppose we go to the very top of the chain here in Ireland. Watch your back.
Cheers, Ger. Yeah, that was Rory O'Connor. Hopefully coming up on the podcast over the next few weeks and months, we will work our way through the O'Connor family one by one. And we might even get a word with Cooper if the family dog is up for an interview as well. Right, moving swiftly along to the intermediate final. This is the part of the show that all those listeners from Cong, Cross and the Neil will have been waiting impatiently for, because this is where, after 117 years, now the Mayo News Football Podcast has not been going that long, although at times I think the three of us in this room feel like it has, but that's how long the Neil have been waiting to win an intermediate championship. And yet, believe it or not, after all those years and all those tough times on and off the field, they finally made the breakthrough on Saturday night. They beat Ballyhaunas by a single point. And I don't know about you, Ed, but you know, sometimes there's a 1 point win and it comes about because one team is leading by a country mile and then the other team comes back into it. But you can't beat one of those games that goes into injury time. The sides are level. Everyone's nerves are jangling. And then there comes a moment where one team make a break for it and it all comes together. And then the final whistle sounds, because it was incredible the way it all played out on Saturday night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the stuff of dreams. Like, it's exactly how you see, you know, if you're, I think Tommy Conroy mentioned it afterwards, that if you want to be winning a county title, that's how you want to do it. Like, you know, to get a winner with the almost the last kick, what probably should have been the last kick of the game, but referee John Walker gave Ballyhaunas a good extra minute in injury time to see if they could work a score. And I don't know, he'd be a popular man in Concross and Dunedin this week if it went to a replay. But
I'd say he wouldn't want to get a puncture up there now, surely. Yeah.
but no, it was terrific, and you know, like, the Ballintubber winning the senior title, you couldn't but admire them and their level of dominance. But like, there was no fairy tale about it, because you know it's not a novelty, like, you know, and that's just the way of the world, like, you know. But the Neil winning an intermediate was such a novelty, and particularly, you know, you're from South Mayo, you'd know all the guys a lot better than I would, Mike. But listening to the podcast during the week and listening to the guys talking about their pride in their club and in their parish, and particularly listening to Pat McGrath, not Pat of RTÉ fame, of course, but Pat of the Neil fame, talking about the pride of this is our place and this is our club and we're so proud of our facilities and so proud of our players and so proud of what we're doing. And you just knew listening to that what it would mean to them to win the last night. Like, you know, it just leapt off the podcast how passionate they are about their club and just what a big day this was going to be for them, like, you know. And we all remember 2012 and the drama and Shawnee Cosgrove's incredible goal to win their first ever junior title. And ever since then, you know, they've been gradually stepping in the right direction most of the time. But I don't think at the start of this year many people would have said that they were maybe contenders, but they might have been contenders, but were many people tipping them? I'm not so sure. So
I know one man here beside us who wasn't tipping them at all.
Yeah.
Yes, Ger, that'd be you. We'll get to you in a second.
We'll have to dig out those predictions. I don't think too many of us come out too well, but anyway, Shinsuke Lela. But there was just something very romantic about it. You know, when you see, and it's not just about the players, and when you see the people on the pitch afterwards, like, I wasn't, I was watching back the game as well and listening to John Varley on Mayo GATV, like, in tears, trying to describe the moment and how it was unbelievable, like, you know. And
John now cries enough, that's the only thing I would say.
Well, I was going to say a big giant of a man like John,
he'd be emotional.
Right, okay. Well, I let you fall on that sort, Mike, if you want. But yeah, it was just, It was great to see, and it's days like that that people live for in the GAA, you know, breakthrough days like that when you first win a county title. Like, they're a club that have had their ups, but, you know, sadly their downs as well in recent years. And I just think it was so clear how much it meant to them, and I think it was so special as well that Shawnee Cosgrove kicked the winner. Like, I think that was just would have meant an awful lot to him, and meant so much to everyone in the club. Like, and he'll always be the guy that helped win them a junior title and kicked the winner in an intermediate final. Like, you know, that's some claim to fame to have.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure he won't have to put his hand in his pocket if he wanders into the gates of Ashford or anywhere else for that matter around Conn Cross the Neil. But Ger, like, it probably seems unfair in one way to boil down such a brilliant game into one passage of play. But for the purposes of the podcast and for the purposes of this passage of it, let's do that. And we were so taken by that last game win and sequence of play that we went back today and we had another look, and we had another look again because we wanted to make sure our mind hadn't played tricks on us. But for the benefit of people who weren't there or maybe were there and it's all a bit fuzzy for them, just talk us through kind of what happened there, because it's 111 to 111. You're half expecting maybe the two teams to sit back, to play KG, to maybe play on the break and possibly even settle for a draw. But instead of that, you just get I got a sense anyway, I thought at the time that, no way. Both of the teams had made their minds up. We want to go and win it. But of course, when you take those risks, then things can go wrong.
Mm. And it looked like a game that was just going to take a mistake from one team that was going to settle it, because it was so tight. Neither team seemed to be likely to give way in terms of defence. You know, there wasn't many fouls being given. Both teams were fairly disciplined, but I suppose the turning point came when Ballyonis lost possession in the middle of the field. Some good tackling from the Neil, and, you know, the perfect man you could probably get coming onto a break, and Tommy Conroy picked the ball up, had probably the second perfect man coming off his shoulder in Aidan O'Sullivan, who has pace as well, back to Tommy, and then probably the best man to stick it over the bar in Shawnee Cosgrove. So it was a fortunate series of events for the Neil, an unfortunate series of events for Ballyonis. But as you said, John Walker gave plenty of time for Ballyhonis to go on the attack, and that they did. They got into the Neil 45 two or three times, but every single time the Neil pushed them back out. They dropped men behind the ball, were disciplined in their tackles, and that's a hard thing to do when you're trying to defend a game. You don't want to go too overzealous in the tackle, give away a stupid foul, and there's always that potential, and you know the conspiracy theorists will always tell you that the referee wants to tie it up, and I'm sure a lot of the Neil supporters in the stand were probably thinking that too. But in fairness to them, they defended so well, very disciplined in the tackle. Anytime Ballyhonus man got caught up with the ball, two or three players were surrounded him, and that's what happened in the end. I think it was Keith Higgins who was the last man in possession for Ballyhonus and got surrounded by two or three of the Neil players, and that was it. But it was, you know, just an incredible finish to a game, and it could have gone either way. But I suppose the big question now in the Neil is when are they building the statue for Seán Cosgrove?
Well, there's plenty of builders out there anyway, so there won't be an issue with throwing it up. They'll probably have it up by dinner time tomorrow if they put their mind to it. But mention of the man himself, and this is the perfect way, I suppose, to tee up the interview that I did with him after the game. God knows there are enough times after big matches, and you have to make these decisions in a split second that we all make the wrong ones. But on this occasion, I was fairly sure when the final whistle blew, there was only one man that we needed to talk to, that you needed to hear from, and that was the man of the moment, Seán Cosgrove, because apart from being a really good footballer, he is he's a great bit of stuff, and he's a really, really good talker as well, which always comes in handy in this game. And I made my way out onto the pitch where the crack was only starting, and that's a fact. And Seán Cosgrove, and I wrote this in the paper this week, you know, it wasn't the first classy thing he'd done on that field all evening, but to see him go around shaking hands with the Ballyhonus players one by one in the midst of all the mayhem and the madness, I suppose it just sort of underlines what kind of a character he is. And as anybody who knows Seanie will tell you, he's been through a lot since that 2012 County Junior final win. His family have had a personal tragedy. He's had his own issues where he had serious knee injuries on both with both knees. His career, I suppose, was at a crossroads not all that long ago. So to come back and kick 7 points in a county final, well, I think it was only right that we heard what he had to say. So here's Seanie Cosgrove. I'm here with Seanie Cosgrove, maybe a minute after the final whistle in the county intermediate final. And Seanie, the Neil are county intermediate champions.
Yeah.
And you've kicked the winner.
Look, Mike, that sounds good. It's as good a Mike Finnerty musing as I've heard. Absolutely elation, I suppose, is the feeling now. But look, back to the wall at half time, put ourselves in a position to see it out, and then decide it. We'd have more drama. So, look, you'd have to say lucky to see it out in the end and get that winner. I don't know who made the interception there on the 45-metre line, but it was vital. And we just worked it, got the score, and just delighted for everybody. Delighted for my teammates, the management team, Owen, Peter, Paul. I played with Owen Hughes, like he's a martyr. You know, a legend of our club, and he's led this team now to senior. And do you know the fact that the Neil and South Mayo are now a senior club, are like, Mike, that's unheard of.
Seanie, a lot of water under the bridge since we stood here 7 years ago.
Absolutely.
And the Neil were county junior champions.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the mixture of emotions going through your mind right now, because yeah, it's been a long road to get to this stage.
It has, Mike, and for numerous reasons, it's a bittersweet feeling for me. But just delighted. I know my parents are up there in the stand, and they'll be delighted as well this evening, and everybody's parents and family and everyone involved in any way with the Neil.
Hello, Seanie boy.
We'll be just utterly thrilled with this small parish, and look, being Mayo people, we're starved of things like this. So the fact that the Neil are getting it now here tonight is, that's fantastic, Mike.
Seanie, I bumped into your dad a couple of weeks ago, and he told me that you're enjoying your football again. You'd started a new job, and you played out there tonight, and all the Neil lads did in that second half, like they're enjoying it. But for you to kick 7 points in a county final and the winner as well, I mean, you must be dancing on the inside.
Look, Mike, I tried to kind of stay as flat as I can and kind of keep my emotions in check, but it's about the club, it's about my teammates, and they're great lads. They're great lads, and to be able to go and do this with them tonight, it makes it all that bit special.
And a few good days and nights ahead.
Does lads call me veteran a veteran ages the last few weeks, so I suppose I'd probably go home and put on the slippers and let the young lads enjoy it.
Shawnee, thanks a million. Great to talk to you. We might see you at the club stairs.
Pleasure as always. Yeah.
Well, I don't think we certainly couldn't have put it any better. And we're going to hear a little later, not all that long ago now, from Owen Hughes as well, the Neil manager. But before we do, Ed, it takes two teams to make a county final. And by God, Ballyhaunis played their part. And again, it was only when I was flicking back through it on Sunday night and watching the highlights, as it were, on Mayo GATV that it sort of reminded me of the fine margins in this game. You know, they played so well with the wind in the first half. They went in 4 points up. They actually pushed that out to five, I think, early in the second half. They topped up the lead by one. And then once the Neil got back and went ahead, Ballyhaunis managed to reel them back in again. And Jason Coyne's shot that hit the post, Jason Coyne was absolutely terrific. And his ability to get a shot off under pressure, he's got a very distinctive sort of snapshot style. But that shot that hit the post from Jason Coyne, I mean, that goes over the bar. It puts Ballyhaunis, I think, a point up at the time, and it just changes the dynamic. But they must be brokenhearted. Like, Ger mentioned Keith Higgins there a few moments ago. And it was just when we watched it back earlier that we spotted Keith Higgins didn't get off the ground for probably the guts of a minute after that final whistle blew. He was absolutely out on his feet. And I think it was a combination of exhaustion and disappointment, and a lot of his teammates as well. Because you talk about teams leaving it all out there, like Ballyhaunis absolutely spent themselves, didn't they, on Saturday night?
They absolutely did. And, you know, it's possible to feel delight for the Neil and feel such, at the same time, feel so sorry for Ballyhaunis, because they contributed in such a huge way to what was a great game. It was so enjoyable to watch, and it was really played in the right spirit as well by both teams. And they really, you're right, they threw absolutely everything at it. Like, I thought Keith Higgins at centre-back just drove on. Like, God, when you see him in the middle-eight there at that level, how he just zips, as to give him his nickname, zips away from guys so quickly. And you're like, what's the best way to handle this fella? Like, you cannot stop him getting away, but you need to kind of, at some stage before he gets into danger territory, you need to try and get a double team on him and force him to offload. Like, but he's just so electric. But no, there's a lot of quality throughout the team, in fairness. And I just think a turning point there was, it seemed to be that when the Neil were attacking, they had a little bit more space to attack in the second half than when Ballyhaunis were attacking. The Neil seemed to be a little bit more organised at the back. And I think the goal that the Neil got as well, it was just Tommy Conroy got isolated in space with Brian Hunt, who just was struggling to stay with him, in fairness. And it was just, you know, like, who can stay with Tommy Conroy when he puts on the afterburners? And just when that goal went in, you thought, okay, they're in bother now. But you're right, like, they kept coming back for more. And, you know, it was them that was on the attack. The sides were level. Who was going to get the score? And all it just took was one turnover. And, you know, you hate to see a mistake. Like, it wasn't a bad mistake. It was a mistake that happens, or a turnover that could happen 40 times in a match. But just that particular turnover just proved to be so costly. And it just shows as well how incredibly tight the Intermediate Football Championship is. Because here's two teams that very few people would have picked out as potential finalists at the start of the year. Certainly in Ballyhaunis' case. Maybe some might have went for the Neil. They played each other in the group stages. And I remember the first game of the year, Ballyhaunis against Ballinrobe, Mike, and a lot of people would have found it hard to predict a winner in that game. Ballyhaunis won it, Ballinrobe end up in the relegation final, and Ballyhaunis end up in the final. So it just goes to show how tightly clustered the Intermediate Championship is, that any team that gets a bit of run, a bit of momentum, can have a right crack off it. Like, everyone was saying Kilchima at the start of the year, they just entered the knockout stages not in top form, and they were beaten and dispatched quite comprehensively. Like, you know, so it just goes to show just how wide open the Intermediate Championship is. And, you know, Ballyhaunis, you often say after a team lose a final that, you know, oh well, they'll have a right crack off it next year. They won't if they slip a little bit, because that's how competitive it is. They'll need to improve even further on it. But they absolutely contributed to a great final the last evening, and, you know, it's not much consolation to say that they couldn't have done much more, but they couldn't.
I want to ask you about one Neil player in particular in just a second. But before I do, there's a few of them I want to give a shout out to. Great to see the goalkeeper, Paddy Hopkins. The curse of the Mayo News did not strike for once. He did an interview with us before the final. And thankfully, he kept his place. He played well. And he's ended up with a medal. So let that be a lesson to anybody out there who doesn't respond to a WhatsApp from Jur or lets the phone ring out when they see me or Ed ringing. It could do you the world of good to do an interview with the Mayo News before a big match. And if you don't believe us, just ask Paddy Hopkins. The Moran brothers, I have to say, Stephen bombed up from wing back. David, tight as ever in the corner. One of the personal highlights for me in the game actually was Brian O'Halloran's point in the second half. I went over to the media tower to watch the intermediate final, so I had a great view of it. He scored a goal in the semi-final. He got a crucial point in the final, and he's the guy, of course, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, who did his work experience in here, and he's welcome back anytime. We can put the finishing touches to him. The quarterback, Stephen Conroy, just pulled the strings, sat in the pocket. Got clattered by Keith Higgins at one stage as well. That won't spoil his growth. He'd be well used to it from rugby matches down the green. And Aidan O'Sullivan, who made a really impressive speech, I felt. And apart from that, as Ger mentioned already, played a crucial part in the winning point and kicked a crucial score as well himself when the going was getting tough with the finish line in sight. And Pádraig Welch, of course. He's such a power runner, and he's the guy that Ger has talked up as a potential bring him in candidate for James Horan. Who knows, we may even see him before too long. But the guy I want to ask you about, Ed and Ger, is Tommy Conroy, because I suppose ever since Tommy won his All-Ireland Schools medal with Ballinrobe Community School a few years ago, he's been on a lot of people's radars. He's been in with the under-20s and the under-21s the last couple of years, and his goal last Saturday night, anybody who was lucky enough to be there to see it in the flesh or watch it on TV will never forget it. And it just gave us a glimpse, didn't it, of what this guy can do when he's got the ball in his hand. Like the pace, the balance, and the calmness of the finish as well. It was one of those goals that people always say they dream about scoring in a county final.
Yeah, it was an incredible goal. And you knew, as soon as he got on the ball and he was a long way from goal, you knew what he was thinking, because the space was there. And, you know, if you're a player like him, teams operate, because he's that good, teams will operate to cut that space out for you, like, you know, to make sure you're not left in those opportunities. So when you get them, you know, you have to try and make the most of it. And how he did, like, you know, and I suppose the two things that impressed me most about him from, I suppose, his natural ability point of view is, first of all, his blistering pace, but also his composure, like, you know, because you often have speed merchants who, you know, can't slow down and nearly kick at a mile a minute, like, but he's able to just smoothly transition and get the shot off and show the composure at the end of the move. And, you know, he's involved with Mayo at the minute, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how he gets on. I would think that, you know, I wouldn't be putting a huge amount of pressure on him for 2020. I think physically he's a little bit of work to do in that regard. But, you know, we'll judge that for ourselves as we're going on, like, you know. But I definitely think he has a big, big future in Mayo football.
Tommy was the man of the match. He finished with 1-2. For what it's worth, I didn't outright disagree with that decision, but I have to admit I did give the nod in the Mayo News to Shawnee Cosgrove. I just thought, overall, the 7 points, the way he kicked the winner, the way he tracked back and tackled. But let's just say if there was a joint Man of the Match award, I would have given it to the two of them. How's that? We're in the home straight here. The clock is against us. But I want you to help me introduce our last interview from the winning camp. And that's the chat you had with Owen Hughes. He makes Kevin Johnson look like Davy Fitz or like I'm trying to think of a 1990s example, maybe a Mick O'Dwyer, you know, a guy who could just wax lyrical at the drop of a hat, because Owen Hughes is one of the quietest men that I know, certainly when he's on a football field and when he's involved with the Neil and when he's got to speak to us guys. But so impressive, and I know you got the impression from talking to him on Saturday night, you were very impressed as well. And the way his players speak about him, I mean, it's only a few years ago since this guy was in a dressing room with them. But I don't think his role or the part he's played in this success can be overstated, can it? Like, there's so much more to him than meets the eye.
Yeah, physically, I was so impressed by him. He came out of the dressing room and he still looked like a player who just thrown his tracksuit on and he was ready to go warm down or something. But just a cool fish. And you can tell that his players have an awful lot of respect for him. And I'd say a lot of that comes back to the fact that a lot of them would have played with him. He's not long finished the game. He's young, intelligent fella. Obviously, he has a very, very definitive way of playing a football game. The players have all bought into it. I'd imagine he's a very, very good man manager because of his age profile compared to some of his teammates. And yeah, like, you know, he took over the job 3 years ago, got relegated out of Division 2 in the first year. As he said himself, they were going through a transitional phase, but, you know, bounced back, has got the maximum out of that squad for this year. You'd imagine there's a lot of potential there. And going by the way he's talking, and you'll hear that he's definitely confident that they are in the perfect place there now as a team and as a club to really push on and have a good crack of not only the senior championship, but I think solidifying themselves as a senior team for a period of time, which I think is, for them, is a very important thing to do.
Here's Owen Hughes.
You're just out of the dressing room, Owen Hughes, the new manager. What are the scenes like in there now at the minute?
Oh, look at it. It's ecstatic in there, you know. It took us 110 years, as Sully said, to win our junior title. 7 years on, and we're after clinching intermediate to bring us up to senior status. We have the facilities to be a senior club. We have the team now, and it's very important to push on in Connacht, but we're absolutely delighted, Ger.
What was said at half-time? Because you didn't really come out playing in the first half. It's a young team there. A lot of people were thinking that you mightn't kick on the second time. What was the message to your team there?
I think it's just back to basics again. You know, a county final can take a path of its own in the first half. A lot of nerves and tension, and a lot of young fellas there. The average age of our team is 23 years of age. So a lot of young lads there, and I don't think you need to rile them up. You need to let them play football. And we spoke to them at half time, but they made the decisions. We only facilitated opening the door to the dressing room. They made the decisions and they drove it on. And I can't say how proud I am for them, and so happy for all our supporters. We've a great following, and we'll give it a rattle now in Connacht, and we'll hopefully push on and develop to be a senior club over the next couple of years, Ger.
How was the heart when you saw Tommy Conroy intercept that last ball, and it really couldn't fail to a better man in Shoney Cosgrove to stick it over the bar?
Exactly. Look, at Tommy has been exceptional all year for us. He's came through 3 years ago, and the guy is his commitment and his dedication. He's just an all-round genuine nice guy, and couldn't be happier when he gets on the ball. Look, at your heart is I suppose it's pulsating, but he usually comes up with the goods, Ger, and we're very happy that Tommy and this equally competent footballers around him to take scores like Shawnee did, as he said. So we have an abundance of talent, but I suppose it's a case of nurturing them now over the next couple of years and getting the best out of them, you know.
When you took the job, you must have eyed a county title with that potential. Your first year didn't go as planned, but you regrouped after that. You must have known deep down that this day is in that squad.
I think it is, and you know what they say, like, you won't get to your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks, Jen. And the first year we took them over, there was a lot of dogs barking in terms of we were up against stiff competition in Division 2. We just kept going. No great pressure on us, Ger. It was we were playing football, playing Division 2, and the team was in flux, as I said, during the week. So what you have now is you have a team that has played in Division 2 before, learned a lot, and we're back up to Division 2 this year, and hopefully we can drive on. But again, it's I can't say we expected it, but we'll take it.
And finally, how would you put this on a barometer, this win for the Neil?
Oh, look, I think that the seeds were sown in 2012, really and truly, by Mossy Costello and his management team, Brian O'Malley, Declan Hughes and Tomás Costello. The seeds are definitely shown, and I think you're starting to see the green shoots now. I don't think we're fully there yet, but we're getting there, and I think we can become a right good senior club over the next couple of years. But 2012 was exceptional. Today is different, I suppose. There's an awful lot of emotion, but it's going to be enjoyed. It has to be enjoyed, because we've had a lot of heartache over the last couple of years, particularly with the two players, Peter and Dara. So
yeah,
we have to enjoy it as well, Ger.
So that's the Neil manager, who I would describe as a serious operator. And I think, as Ger said, don't be one bit surprised if we're all heading up the motorway at in the not too distant future, cheering on the Neil in an All-Ireland intermediate club final, because there's no doubt if they could get on a roll, get on a run, then who knows, anything is possible. Lads, just to wrap up, congratulations to Ballintubber and the Neil. Commiserations to Ballyhadreen and to Ballyhaunas. The marathon that was the county championships here in Mayo has finally come to an end. Started back in April, it's finished in the midst of October. And the county titles have been handed out. Very quickly, lads, highlights off the top of your head in terms of the games that you were at, or the games you saw, or the games you heard about. Give me your highlight, the moment you won't forget. Ger, we'll throw to you first. Ed's mind is starting to slip a little at this stage.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here now, Mike, as well. Geez, you can't look past Seanan Cosgrove's point there to win it for the Neil. I know it's the most recent one, but and the fact that I'm coming to the end of a 14-hour day, my head is a bit fried now. It's the one that's popping out, so I'm going to go with that.
Ed?
If I mention the Neil as well, I think I'll get killed in Ballintubber, but I'm going to go with the Neil as well, for the simple reason, and I was saying this to the lads in the run-up to the county final, they're one of those clubs as well that very few people have an axe to grind with. Like, they carry themselves very well as a club. You know, they were junior for so many years, so they mightn't necessarily have been rivals with a lot of clubs, but since they came up from junior, they play football in a nice, open, expansive way. You know, the games are generally free from rancor, and I think as a result that they, you know, a lot of teams warm to them. Like, you know, they still don't want to lose to them, obviously. Like, you know, but there's no ill feeling towards them. I get that sense. They're one of those clubs, like, you know, so I think from people just love to see that. And I just think as well, if we're to look on Ballintubber, I think Keelan McDonald coming on. And be
Ed, I can't believe you just stole my thunder. I was there going, I'm gonna swoop in here now, and everyone's gonna think, geez, Finnerty knows his stuff for once. Or maybe not.
Okay, I'll stick with the Neil, Mike. I'll leave that Ballintubber.
Yeah, let's edit that bit out.
But no, Keelan McDonald coming on, I think, and you know, virtually on, it's now what, it's 11 o'clock on a Monday night, and Mike is thinking, where else am I going to go for inspiration? So, but yeah, Keelan coming on the last night, and a lot of people wouldn't have been familiar with him, wouldn't have heard much about him, and kicking his first point when he came on was just an incredible score, and second point, not bad either, like, you know, so it just kind of showed that as long on the road as many of the Ballintubber players are, they've managed to keep regenerating, and they have five or six guys that played in the last two county finals that wouldn't have been involved before, and that has made a huge, huge difference to them, I think, in terms of getting from the team of 2014 to the team of 2018, and the team in between that maybe struggled some of the time against Castlebar Mitchells. It has just given them new impetus, and I think the likes of him coming on the last evening just shown just that star quality when it was needed. Again, it just goes back to the point I was making, they have so much quality in attack when they need it.
Sorry, Mike.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a certain Mayo TD on Morning Ireland many, many hours ago, honest to God, I was going to say just the sheer bravado, I suppose, of Keelan McDonald, who came on for his first taste of a county senior football final. He's only 20, I think Jura was telling me earlier on. 22, I beg your pardon, 22. That makes it even less impressive. No, he's only 22. He'd be well known as a soccer player at Ballyglass, but to come on and just grab the thing by the scruff of the neck and kick two spectacular points, I concur with Ed, and I'll be learning next time around. I'll make sure I get my spake in first, and all's well that will end well. So that's it. Just to remind you, we've got a 12-page county final pullout in the paper this week. That's split between the senior and intermediate finals. Loads of interviews, lots of pictures. We've got the Sean Rice column. And, of course, no county final pullout would be complete without the thoughts of Willie McHugh, who pens a lovely essay in tribute to the Neil's breakthrough win in the intermediate final. That's it from us. Hope you enjoyed this latest Mayo News football podcast. These, of course, have been our club editions, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon.